Welcome to the Voices of Women Physicians podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Tatiana Resnik, a practicing physician and a certified life coach. You will hear about inspirational journeys and practical tips from amazing women physician experts, as well as effective coaching and steps in your process. Welcome everyone to this episode of Voices of Women Physicians podcast. I'm so happy and honored to have here today wonderful Dr. Mariel Conception. And today we will speak about DPC, which is direct primary care. Welcome, Dr. Conception. Thank you so much for joining me here today.
It's definitely an honor. Thank you so much for the work that you do in highlighting women physicians. It's so important to make sure that our story is told as well. So thank you again for your work.
I'm so happy to have you here. And I love your podcast, My DPC Story. It's amazing. So helpful. So please, for our listeners, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, sure. So I am originally from Sacramento, California, and I went to UC Davis. I did some work there, and then I found myself going to medical school out in Omaha, Nebraska at Creighton University. So that's where I went to medical school. And it was there that I really honed in on what I actually wanted to do, and that was become a family physician. The reason I mentioned growing up in Sacramento and staying in Northern California specifically is because as a Filipino, I was also only told the three options in life are doctor, teacher, lawyer. Which one do you want to be? And so going out to Nebraska was amazing. It was so wonderful. The people in the Midwest are just some of the most loving people I've ever met. And it was such a privilege for the experience that was extended to Creighton students to be able to do half of their family medicine rotation in a place called Superior, Nebraska. And that was in the middle geographically of the United States. So it's a community of about 2,000 people. But the family doctors there, one of them, my biggest mentor, just celebrated his 40th year of being in this community that serves about 6,000 people. And it was there I really saw what a true family physician could do with their training and with the community to be able to practice in. So that's a little bit about my medical training. Separately, I'm a mom of two boys. Currently, they're 6 and 3. My husband is also a family physician. And in terms of direct primary care, a little bit about that, I was a traditional family physician. I went to be for service right after residency. And I worked in a rural location because I wanted to practice in a model that was very much like what I saw in Superior, but in California, because that's where my family is. And so I was very fortunate that my husband was also a family physician who wanted to practice rurally. And we moved to a location, it's about 2 hours away from Sacramento. And we were able to do full scope care until we weren't. And until we weren't translated to, we got threatened by our employer to basically, if we didn't sign their contract that had evergreen clauses. And for those of you who have not heard of an evergreen clause, it's a very, very foul word in contracting in medicine for physicians. Evergreen means it's never going to be changed. And so we were being quoted rates that were not up to date, rates that were not fair for a rural medicine doctor. And the threat was you either sign our contract or you're no longer going to work for us. And so it was at that time, this is a month shy, I believe, of 6 years into my job in fee for service, that I was like, I can't do this anymore. And 2 years prior, an orthopedic surgeon had told me about direct primary care. And I had gone to the conferences, I thought about it, but there was no reason for me to rip off the Band-Aid and to leave fee for service because I was getting a salary. But then when the wheels hit the pavement, it was like, now the salary is no longer there. It's RVUs or nothing. And it was at that point that I was like, wow, this is not the model for me. And it was at that point that I didn't have any other choice. It was either continue on this path of fee-for-service and hate every day of me showing up to clinic under that model or leaving completely and doing direct primary care. And so in September of 2021, I opened Big Trees MD, my direct primary care practice. And then something to put more salt on that wound of the employed experience, just this last January of 23, my husband, again, he's a family physician. He remained at the clinic so that we could have some income while I was doing DPC, but he was told eventually that they were going to a non-physician model. And so he lost his job because in California, it's totally fine for a non-doctor to pretend that they're a doctor. And so it's really unfortunate, especially in rural America, because as you know, as all of your listeners know, it's very hard to get good quality people to go to rural America. And then when you have our situation where that's definitely the case, I think in the first year that we were out here, I want to say 7 to 11 primary care people, physicians and non-physician providers left and they've not returned. Like that number has not returned. And so it's a really, really big medical desert. My husband and I are the only people that are running a clinic where you can be seen if you're pregnant in the entire county. And that wasn't valuable to the employer. That wasn't valuable to maintain access to that quality of care here. And we already see with non-physician providers, with fee-for-service 15 minutes or less visits, mistakes are made left and right. And then you add to that, you don't even have access to be able to see your doctor or non-physician provider. Then you have to go to the emergency room for a cough that you've had for 6 weeks, non-emergency stuff. Like I'm sure that all of your listeners are just nodding their head. And so that's a little bit about me and why I went into direct primary care. There's no other option, or I could leave medicine, but that wasn't initially why I went to medical school, to then leave medicine, right?
Oh, yes. It's such a powerful situation. And how did you start? So what was your first step? You made the decision to go to DPC model. What were your first several steps?
Yeah. So I will say that from my experience of going to the DPC summits, of which there are many throughout the year, I kept on going back to retelling other people's stories and saying, hey, this person did it. This person did it also. This person did it in all different regions of the country. And so it was when I said, hey, I was filled with this righteous rage to say, how can we dedicate our lives, pretty much all of our 20s, to going to medical school and then not be taught the cruel business of medicine, especially where it is today? And then just be thrown to the wolves like, oh, you don't even know that there's any other options except being employed out of residency, to clarify. And so what I did was I said, for me, the way that I can manifest this righteous rage in a positive and helpful way to our community as physicians is to tell these stories on the regular. And so, like you said, on my DPC story, the podcast that I host weekly, there are direct primary care doctors from all over the country sharing their stories. And that allows me to feel so good about that I have created a platform where people who are experiencing the burnout, the gaslighting, all of the things from the system are able to speak and have a platform to share their story on. And so it was through hearing their stories, asking them questions like you're asking me, that I learned about direct primary care. And then definitely I had a lot of on the ground learning when I opened my DPC and it was like, it's one thing to hear about DPC, and then it's one thing to do DPC. So I've had some experience now under my belt being a DPC doctor, going from a telemedicine home visit model only with very low overhead to opening a clinic. And then to now recently, we are like literally a week away from closing on a building for our clinic.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you. We've gone through a lot of changes and I've gone through a lot of changes professionally being an entrepreneur after going to medical school without an MBA.
I just love it. And I just want to tell, I love your podcast so much. I am, in addition to being a physician, I'm a hospitalist, also in California. And in addition to that, I'm also a certified life coach. And I help women physicians to start and expand their own ventures. And some of my clients actually want to open DPC. And your podcast is one of resources I recommend them to listen to on a regular, because so much value, so much helpful information, and so many different approaches, different stories. Every story is unique and you learn something from each one of them.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate all of the positive talk about the podcast. And it is true. I think that that's where it really goes back to, just like when you talk with the people that you coach, everybody's story is different, but it's so refreshing in this day and age when physicians are really treated as glorified people who are behind the desk workers, not actually clinicians, not being paid to use their brains anymore. And I say that very biased when I say that, but when it comes to everybody is different, I think that's why the podcast is such a useful tool, is because everyone experiences how to choose an EMR, how to do your billing, how to do whatever it is differently based on their lifestyle, their history, where they are in their life. So I think that's awesome that you're picking up on that when you hear the episodes too.
It's so helpful. So tell us a little bit about your own. So you decided to start it. I always love to listen about those first steps.
Yeah. So when I started, I knew that I wanted to keep overhead low. That's one thing that even before I started recording the podcast stories, I kept hearing over and over and over. And it makes sense because it's like you're opening a business, especially if you don't have an MBA. To me, it made sense to figure stuff out as you're going along rather than having a huge debt to then pay off before. And it's one more thing to worry about before you have a lot of patients. Now, there are exceptions to the rule. Like I will point out family doctor, Dr. Kissy Blackwell down in Wichita Falls, Texas, she opened with 278 patients. So that's not the normal, but yeah. Like for me, I had an advantage because in my area, although it's rural, I was known in my community for, again, like almost 6 years. And so that really helped. But I opened with a strategy that I had picked up from Dr. Emily Scott, who's at Halcyon Health DPC in Irvine, California. So she had mentioned during one of her presentations at one of the summits that she had created a blog where she was doing this blog separate from her employment website, whatever. And she was talking about like what to do about UTI and things like that, common medical issues that we would see in family practice. And then what she did was when she opened, she changed that website and redirected it to her new website. So I took that as a really, really huge gold nugget for my practice. And so what I did was I had created a website, and I learned this from my lawyer, that in every practice, we cannot just freely market to our existing patients in fee-for-service before jumping into DPC. So what I had done was it didn't have any HIPAA information on it, but I had created basically a form for people to fill out to know where I was going to be next. And so it was that form on the website that I had created that I redirected to bigtreesmd.com. And so that's how, if people were with the old website address or the new one, people could find me no matter what. So that's how I really started. And then I had, like in any community, it's very different in this day and age to say, wait, so you're not covered by insurance? And it continues to this day to be a discussion that we always have during our patient meet and greets. But the people who joined me initially, they were people that I had taken care of. I was so grateful that they wanted me as a physician and not they wanted fill in big box clinic name here, and that they wanted my care enough to invest in it. And that's a point of contention for a lot of doctors who are like, wait, I love DPC, but I couldn't do it because of fill in the blank there. And the stories on the podcast, they demonstrate over and over and over that people in every type of community, rural, urban, rich, poor, doesn't matter. Dr. Stephanie Phillips in Georgia, she's in one of the poorest counties in Georgia. I think it's the poorest county. And people are paying her on average $75 per member per month. And they're cash pay workers. Like they don't have health insurance with their benefits. And yet they're still able to pay her because they want the best quality care and they're not going to go bankrupt for it. And so it's amazing to hear all of these fears about, I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. And then to hear all of these stories and then feel like, oh man, I'm planning it right now. Right. So when my patients joined, I would say there was a big buy-in in the beginning, maybe like 3 months, because I had stopped practicing, I believe, in August, and then I opened up September. So I think maybe October, November is when people started joining me. And then what I also did was I limited how many people I would see as new patients per month so that I would have this rolling wait list. Right now, if you go to our website, it says join our wait list because that's a technique we still use, which I picked up from another guest on the podcast because it creates a level of FOMO, so fear of missing out, but also it allows you to control the spigot. So for me, it's like, I wanted to take care of people, but I'm like, I've not opened a clinic before. Like, oh my gosh, I need 10 cc syringes. I don't have any, I got to order some. And to be able to have time to pivot for little things like that without having the like flood of patients has been really helpful. And when I mentioned that I opened as a telemedicine home visit model practice only for that low overhead specifically, it also helped me figure out what was going to be the geography of the patients who were coming to the clinic to see if that was going to remain in Arnold, our town, or if that was going to be elsewhere. And so that helped me figure out where I could have the actual like physical brick and mortar clinic once we opened. And then about a year after we opened, I went to the brick and mortar plus telemedicine plus home visit model. And it's just been wonderful for our patients because now they have multiple options. And for the people who are unable to come into the clinic, I just count their home visits as regular clinic visits. And we don't have to nickel and dime people about like, well, your copay today is whatever. And I know you're still paying for insurance, but that doesn't matter. And the DPC model has really allowed me to not only practice medicine more thoroughly because I have more time with patients and I have fewer patients on my panel, but also I'm able to be an advocate for my patients in the healthcare system. So for example, I have a patient who is needing hospitalization, and I was able to talk to her family about, okay, I already texted the doctors down at the hospital because they were my attendings, and this is what you need to say. And that's one way of advocating for patients. Another thing is, like, for example, I had this conversation yesterday with a patient. She's on a very weird dose of medication prescribed by her specialist. And so the mail pharmacy will never send her the right amount of medicine. And so I said, okay, so here's an option for less than what you're paying for, I think it's 3 months or something of medication. You could get 500 tablets of the same thing for like $40 or something. And she was like, oh, really hard to argue with that, right? And then also the example that I like to give is on labs. So labs, it's a great example of how there's a lot of magic math going on when it comes to insurance companies and what the cost of care is. When it comes to labs, the cost of labs when it's a transparent wholesale price is very different than even if you go to a health fair, and especially when you go through insurance. So for example, there was a person who said, well, my annual labs out of pocket is an extra cost for my annual labs. It's about $400 a year. And I'm like, what if you could get that for $65 and didn't use your insurance? And again, it was like, what? How is this legal? Like, these are questions that I get from patients. And it's really amazing and empowering as a physician to be able to say these things and to have the time to say these things, because I'm not fighting the clock. I'm not saying like, God, I'm an hour and a half behind already. And like, I got to hurry this up. But man, their dog just died. So now I can't leave the room. All of those things that we go through in fee-for-service when we're trying to bring humanism to medicine, and we don't have the time to, we're not allowed to. So this is where my clinic really just gradually got started. But all the while I was talking to other physicians about their DPCs. So it allowed me to also strategize about what I would do next.
Yes, that's so powerful. And for our listeners who are not very familiar, if you can go a little deeper into how DPC arranges low cost of free medications, so low cost labs and imaging, and how from a physician's side all of this works.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's very interesting. And I love this question, because in medical school, like I mentioned, we're not taught entrepreneurship. We're not taught the business of healthcare. Then you get to residency and the options that you know are 99213, 99214, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, you don't even know that there's an option out there. Now, I will say that since I graduated residency in 2015, that even my residency is a great example of how people are getting practice management exposure. So they're visiting private practices, they're visiting DPCs, but it's like a drop in the bucket compared to the 3 years that we spend in family medicine doing basic residency. And so when it comes to the model of direct primary care is simply a business model that people can follow to deliver care directly to the patients. So it's like Netflix, or it's like a gym membership. Those are the two examples that are given quite frequently, because it's like when patients hear that, they're like, oh, so I pay you a membership fee and then I get care. Bingo, that's it. And it's very different than concierge, because true concierge practices still double dip. They charge an access fee, but then they also still bill insurance. Dr. Ingrid Liu out of the Chicagoland area is a great example. She was in two concierge practices before she opened her DPC. And she talks in her story about how this was not the right model, even though she thought it would be better than traditional fee for service, it just still didn't meet the bucket of her being able to deliver the medicine that she wanted to. So when it comes to DPC as a model, when we are open as individual clinics that don't have to worry about whether insurance covers something or not, we can actually look at the transparent pricing of what is the cost of care. So for example, a calcium score, I can't get it covered anywhere, but if my patient drives an hour and a half, they can get it for $99 in Turlock, or they can get it for $300 in Sacramento. But I'm able to talk this language. I mean, it's just like when we go to any other commerce type in this country, it's like, how much do your stamps cost? How much do your oranges cost? How much does healthcare cost? Nobody knows, which is a huge slap in the face to Americans, because they can't then shop around for their healthcare. But being a DPC physician who's being paid directly by our patients, we work directly for our patients. We don't work for insurance practices. So we're not told, well, it's not covered, so you can't do this. Or you have to make the patient leave their work, find daycare for their kids to come in so that you can get your magic codes for you to review their labs. Like, none of that happens. I mean, yesterday I told my girlfriends who are doing DPC also, I was like on my way to a patient visit. This is like a 30-minute trigger point type injection appointment. And it's like one of my oldest patients, like in terms of taking care of her for multiple years, sweetest patient ever. And I mean, clearly you and I podcast, so like we don't practice in brevity of words. But when it comes to my patient visit yesterday, I was like, girls, I know this is going to be a half an hour visit, which is actually going to be an hour and a half. And sure enough, it was, because it was like, I got there, turned the heat on, opened my EMR, but I wasn't pressured by like, okay, I got to go because my first patient is at 8, but they're not even room till 8:15. Like every one of us knows how that is so frustrating. It's like, what is the point of scheduling someone at 8 if there's not even a person opening the door until 8? And so I took the time to ask about, how are you doing? How is your partner doing? Getting these updates so it's not so like one time per year, I see you and get whatever I can in 30 minutes or less. So I hope that clarifies as to what this model is, but it's a business model that allows people to work for their patients. And that's why it's not only limited to primary care. I mean, you have Dr. Andy Burkowski, who's a quaternary specialist. He's the specialist that the specialists send their patients to if they have restless leg syndrome or sleep issues. I mean, you have people who are doing dermatology, rheumatology, gastroenterology. There's ways to do cash-based procedures, and there's even cash-based surgery centers in different areas of the country. Hopefully there will be more, but that's how I would describe DPC for those people who aren't familiar with the term.
It is excellent description.
This concludes the first part of our interview with Dr. Conception. And in the next episode, we will hear a second part of this remarkable interview about starting and building direct primary care practice. Stay tuned!
Thank you for listening to my podcast. If you enjoyed it or found it helpful, please subscribe, leave a 5-star review, and share it with a friend. Have any topics you'd like covered? Send me an email at joyfulsuccessliving@gmail.com. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram to connect at Joyful Success Living. Have an amazing week. See you next time.
The Voices of Women Physicians podcast is for entertainment purposes only and does not provide any medical, financial, tax, legal, or psychological services or advice. You are responsible for your own well-being, decisions, and results. Dr. Resnick is a practicing physician, but Voices of Women Physicians podcast is not reflective of the opinion of her employer. You should always contact a professional if you have any specific questions about your unique situation.